It's my pleasure to introduce the incredible Mr. Leonard Armando. So, Leonard Armando, give
thank
a
you.
Round
of applause.
What's up,
dude?
Hi, guys. Hello.
Always brings the energy. This man has had an imprint on all different areas of business, whether it's previously serving as the CMO of Skechers, whether it's building world-renowned brands such as the Shaq brand or the Golden Boy with Oscar De La Hoya, but then also, especially as Southern California, I think it really started and then scaled across the world, but also co-founded the AVP, Pro Beach Volleyball Tour. So as you can tell, a man of many, many, many talents, but it is a true pleasure to have him here today. So gentlemen, please take it on.
Thank you.
Lenny also is a world famous sports agent, how he got into that side of it. So recruited Ronnie Lott was his first. It was a great story, but Shaq and so many other. He was what I call a fair collaborator with Lee Steinberg. So he was just in a different space than Lee. And whenever Lee and I would lose a client to someone like Lenny or Joel, the Tolners, the good guys out there, we always had an abundant attitude because you can't represent everyone. In fact, Bruce Tolner, he did something I thought would never be done. He represented the first and second pick in the NFL draft because it's hard to sell two kids if you can't tell one of them you deserve to be the first pick in the draft. He Wentz and Goff, Goff went one, Wentz went two, and it was his capability of taking someone like Wentz and getting him and selling him to the second position without him ever needing or thinking he would be the first pick. But
that's tough, you know, because I had the same issue when I was representing Shaq and Akeem.
Right.
And they were playing each other in the NBA finals and I didn't know who to root for.
Yeah. try this one. We represented Bruce Smith and he was trying to destroy our entire portfolio of clients, Warren Moon, Steve Young, and Troy Aikman. Yeah. Every time Bruce Smith shattered into Warren, me and Lee were like, Bruce! One side or the other. Yep. But sports agency is an interesting field, and it's changed now completely. But I'm more curious about skills and knowledge. Yeah. The people who seem to go beyond just being sports agents have certain skills and knowledge. And I was wondering if you have seen or you could explain to us some of the characteristics that you think has allowed certain people in sports to elevate what they're doing today to help with media, charity. I mean, Shaq's a great example, right? Yeah. He's an athlete, but he's probably one of the best content creators in the world.
And most loved.
And loved, right.
I mean, everyone loves Shaq, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's a really interesting time, and everyone needs to realize that we always have to embrace change, because if we don't, then we're going to fall behind and not be able to keep up with the trends. And one of the things that I noticed when I was representing Shaq is that marketing was changing. In other words, Michael Jordan was like the let's say, consummate endorser of products, and he was like a perfect pitch man. But we talked with Shaq about how can we actually change the game and have you own your own intellectual property and then licensed it to other people and use other people's money to build your brand. And it worked really effectively for him. And in today's world, the sports agency business has changed a lot. It's really complex because athletes have more influence in culture than ever before. And you see the way technology is changing everything, the way marketing is changing, the way AI is like, you know, this tsunami that's like, you know, washing us all ashore. And you have to be ready to make changes. So today in the sports business, like, you know this, David, but we represent the number one college basketball player in America who's projected to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. His name is AJ DeBonsa. Now, when Shaq referred he and his family to me, he walked in and said, you know, you taught me everything I know, and I want you to teach these people how to live in today's world that's changing really rapidly. And so I didn't become their agent. I became their advisor to help architect everything that was necessary to make sure that they were plugged into the right people in the right places for the right opportunities. So it's changed a lot. So I'm now an architect more than I am an agent. And you have to really be ready to understand how to plug into the various areas of expertise that are developing in today's sports world.
which leads me to how I got hired to run Lee Steinberg. Most people were like, who the hell is this guy? Where did he come from? He wasn't a famous agent. He wasn't a great lawyer. But Lee's a visionary. And so in the early 2000s, Lee saw the future of sports was not in sports agentry. It was in technology and venture capital. And my entire career, when I met Lee Steinberg, was he had never met anyone who did have a law degree and had some sports background, but had such an extensive experience in technology and venture capital. I was pretty much the only one in a stack of 2,500 people that he was looking at to take Jeff Morad's job that had raised hundreds of millions of dollars, had run a technology company and done all of these things. Lee, as usual, was right about the future. He's a visionary and that's how he created sports agentry and does what he does still today. But for you, you talked about all these things changing. I see the most change occurring because of technology and venture capital. How do you see these two things intertwining? And I mean, Jack is a great example again, and others that you work with. How are these things intertwining into our future of business with a sports backdrop? Because that's what business is really about today. Is you're an ad media guy or whatever, but it's a backdrop of sports that you're working in, kind of like Jerry Maguire was a love story in the background. How is venture and technology intertwining into the future of this monetization of sports?
Well, I think the way you should look at it is look at the athlete, their influence in culture, and the way that they can become a magnet for opportunity. So, you know, back in the old days, it was you played on the court or on the field and you got paid a good amount of money for doing that. And hopefully you got into some businesses on the side because you were famous and people wanted to associate with you. And maybe you got an endorsement deal or two. Today, it's way more complex. The athletes are real. And this started back in the San Francisco 49ers days with Ronnie Lott when he was in a place where Silicon Valley was evolving and that's where tech was going. And so these athletes are saying, well, I want to get involved in that. I want a piece of tech and where it's going. I want to build out a portfolio. And a lot of times what you do is you look at the athletes today and they have a portfolio that they've gotten into investments through their relationships in technology. They also are building companies, production companies. So they're not only creating content themselves, but they're serving as a magnet for introducing new opportunities and stories into their production company. So, you know, if you're an athlete today in sports, you have an opportunity to do lots of different things than you did before, and you can expand your portfolio in incredible ways. And technology is sort of like the gateway to that.
And they become partners in venture capital firms. So Ronnie Lott, Steve Young, Aaron Rodgers here locally with the Roth Capital guys, RC Ventures, and Matt Higgins, and all of these guys. And it started more on the entertainment side with Rock, The Rock. I remember he had the Under Armour deal, and he was smart enough to say, look, I don't want $10 million a year. I forget what the number was they were going to pay him. It was a $100 million total deal. He said, I'd rather get $100 million in stock. Because if
bad move by him.
But
early on, the toilet.
It went in the toilet. Right. But the idea was smart that instead of I'll take the stock where it's at today, and when you attach my name to it, I'm already elevating my $100 million to $200 million.
Yeah.
In theory.
Right.
But in the end, too, we both know in endorsement deals, the mitigation of risk to take stock isn't, you know, a bad move because you're already being overpaid to be part of something. So you have a bigger lottery ticket than just getting another $10 million, which may or may not move the needle. But as you can see with tequila companies and water companies, the guys that do take equity positions can end up being billionaires.
Yeah, like Kobe did with Under Armour. Right. And back to your point about, you know, athletes wanting to get involved in venture companies. So I kind of helped with that many years ago. There was a guy named Ron Conway, who's known as the godfather of Silicon Valley. And he called me up one day. He said, I want to meet some athletes. I want to come to LA and meet some entertainers. And I just so happened at the time to be in an office with the guy who represented Arnold Schwarzenegger, who now also does LeBron James's investments. And so we kind of introduced him around, and all of a sudden, lots of entertainers and lots of athletes started getting involved in the venture world. And to your point about The Rock, these athletes have so much power, and these big celebrities have so much power now they can actually go to companies and say, if you want me, then I'm going to do all the production. I'm going to control all the creative, and we'll just deliver you the end result. And that's what The Rock did, actually, yes. in his situation. He just said, I'll film the commercials. I'll create the commercials, and I'll give them to you, and you pay me a fee for doing all that. So, like I said, if you are a powerful athlete in culture today, you have so many different options to exploit opportunity. And that's the exciting part, because as the advisor, for example, for this kid, I can architect his future in ways that are really, really interesting, really, really innovative. And he doesn't really understand it yet, but he's going to learn as time goes on, and ultimately he will. And that's sort of the fun part of what we do.
Before we start taking questions from the people that are truly in what they want to know, I'm curious. One of the things that I've experienced through the years of working with so many athletes at so many ages is understanding the character side of it. Money amplifies who you are. And looking at the kids that were nominated for the Heisman Trophy and Mendoza, who is a character and has great character, like Tim Tebow, regardless of their talent. I would get into an argument with Warren Moon. I was like, Tim Tebow is going to be the greatest NFL quarterback ever. And he goes, he won't even make it. And I was like,
right.
And he was right. He's always right about that. Trust me. Yeah, yeah. The guy is, I call him QB1 Kenobi when it comes to talent. He just knows process. He knows things about being a quarterback that we would never know. But I see Mendoza the same way. Regardless, you know, the age group in which we're giving all this money to has even gone to the eighth grade level, seventh grade level.
Because
of the NIL was.
Yeah.
But money amplifies character, but you haven't had enough time to develop your character. It's a very dangerous, dangerous thing. And I think a lot of people don't distinguish that. Like when you give an idiot like me a ton of money in my 20s, I had time to develop my character. I just didn't have anyone around me guiding me through the process to maintain my character. It's different than you haven't developed your character, but here's a shitload of money. And now that there's a different problem. I know the common denominator of all successful people, whether they go through the highs and the lows, is a desire that they must be what they can be.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be very successful in sports, you need to have that desire. Where do you see the help that we can give any age group to understand this new world of abundant, you know, overpaying and the loss of character?
You know, I mean, I've been really fortunate to work with people with great character. I mean, everyone loves Shaq, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of starts with your core values. And they're either taught to you by your parents or someone close to you as you're growing up. And it's the people around you that influence that. You know, we have a set of core values at our company that we live by. I always repeat it when I come here. It's our kind of our, we call it our manifesto. And it basically, you know, the short version is our chief aim is to improve the lives of others and enable greatness in everyone, working with remarkable people on remarkable things, striving to exceed expectation, leading with compassion, not judgment, humility, not ego, love, not fear. And that North Star guides you in every single encounter that you have in life, whether it's business or personal or otherwise. And so you have to have a set of core values to start with. That's really, really important. And then you have to, and David, and this has to do with what you always talk about, gratitude. You have to also then have the right kind of state of mind and the right kind of energy to succeed, because that state of mind is going to give you that wealth of positive energy to get you through the day, you know, using your core values as sort of like the North Star of what you do. And then there's things that you have to focus on that in life that will help you become successful, building the right kind of relationships, understanding your value proposition, knowing how to deal with adversity and failure, the kinds of things, humility, you know, also just understanding how important it is to navigate change. And then serving, you know, how do you serve others in ways that will ultimately reflect back on who you are and what you contribute to our culture and our society? So kind of that's the way I think about it. And you got to teach that to these young people as they're growing up. And that's why when Shaq brought me this kid, AJ DeBonsa, he said to the family, Leonard taught me everything I know, and I want him to teach your son this so that he can continue to grow. And I was lucky enough that this kid was brought up in a, you know, strict Catholic family. His dad was from the Congo. His mother was from Jamaica. Not that they're evangelists or anything, but it was just like old school core values. You know, yes, sir, no, sir. Can I open the door for you, ma'am? I mean, that's the kind of values the kid has. He's not in the clubs. He's not going to be wielding guns. And it's a delight to work with people like that.
It sure is. I heard a quote, and we'll get to questions. There are no lazy kids. There's only lazy parents.
Okay.
So how much are you willing to work? Toughest job in the world, raising kids. Anyways.
You know, when you hear somebody say, my dad is my hero, you know they've done a good job.
Yeah. I say my mom is
like
my hero.
Like Tom Brady always says.
Yeah. Right. My mom's my hero. So right, yeah. On that side, she did a great job. Questions? Marianne.
So I read a book when I was younger, something for Joey, and his brother received a Heisman Trophy. Okay, then I worked for MCI WorldCom. Michael Jordan was in my space for a long time. Last week, I met Nick Lowry. Okay, great man. I live in Las Vegas currently. A few years ago, there was a new player, a Raiders player. He was 22 years old, went out partying.
I remember.
You remember this? Mm. Okay, bad accident, okay? So now I see a lot of this. Where are the grounding of the players? Because I'm here to change the world and to change, you know, how people live their lives in integrity, to help them live their lives in integrity. Where is it where, like, coaches and influencers, agents like yourself, guides, architects, can come together for these younger players and make a difference, a bigger difference than.
Well, I think it really gets right down to the individual's ecosystem and people that surround that person, because we are influenced by those that we spend time with and we become more like them. So it's really a difficult job to. But it's true. You surround yourself with the people that you want to be like, because that's what's going to reflect on you. And there's studies that have been done on that. You know, you are basically a product of your environment. So if you have great parents that are around you, if you have great friends that are influencing you the right way, I mean, look at a guy like Ja Morant, you know, great talent, amazing. And he makes bad decisions one after another because of his crew. That's always telling him to do this, tell him to do that. And of course he's influenced by it. So it's really difficult to create a system to help everybody. Yes, of course, you can provide that resource if they're willing to avail themselves to it, but it's really the people that are around them day to day that's going to make the difference.
Ike.
Question more specific to me, and then a second one that's more of a generalization. For me specifically, so you got new AJ, Shaq's like, here's his kid. With AJ's and people like him, their situation is for sure. Because he's talented, people are looking to give him money. And because of that, he's going to have this opportunity to influence his own brand.
Yeah.
People pay him to build his brand. Someone like me, more specifically, it's people aren't trying to pay me to build my brand. They're trying to
charge you.
Charge me.
Like David's charging.
Exactly.
So. But I like sell sandwiches. I want you to buy sandwiches. So it's I get it. I want you to give me money in exchange for a product. How is it someone like me could get people to, what would you, if I was your client, you'd be like, all right, I do these 12-3-1 thing.
Well, what do you want to do? But what do you want to do? I mean, what is your value proposition? So that's one of the things I talk about. What's your value proposition? What makes you unique and special? And what are you trying to influence people to do?
Well, one, I am currently feeding 10, 12 million people a year, but also specifically for.
Oh, you're.
He has 100 and.
Like 50 restaurants.
He has 150 restaurants.
Okay. So,
and so he, and he's trying to personal brand. His personal brand is tied in Ike's Love and Sandwiches. So he wants to build this brand, but instead of as a beyond the business brand, which is growing immensely, he wants to elevate it or
okay, so
leverage his personal.
I understand that now. So okay, I didn't understand where you're going. You were saying you're feeding people. I didn't know exactly what that meant. Anyway, so
I eat a lot.
I would say that what you should do, just the top of my head, is turn yourself, Ike, into a personality associated with your restaurant chain, and become the face of it through content that you create. And I'm just making this up now. I would do short form content but I would turn it into a series, almost like they were talking about doing with anyway, I would have the show out of your restaurants with you as the star, and just the, like 2-minute episodes, episodic, with actors, and you're the star, and you represent the face of the brand.
And to Seth, raise your hand. That's what he does for me. So as we're building out the Dave Meltzer channel, and because I have the same, just a little bit ahead of you, right, idea with my personal brand and community. So that's what Seth does.
Look what the Kardashians are doing right now. They're starting to do these short form episodic, you know, episodes and putting them out on social media, cheap to produce. You put them out. People are watch them quickly because their attention span is short and they're looking for the next one. You know, it'd be a fun little thing for you to do. That would be my idea for the day.
So actually pay people actors.
Yeah. 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 I think that could be.
You're the star.
You're the star coming out of your restaurant. And there's like a little theme every single show. Like, I don't know, somebody wants to come in and order a burger with 25 different things on. I don't know. What kind of food? Sandwiches, right? They ask for some crazy sandwich. And then you like go into the back and you go, can we do this for them? Or, I don't know.
Plus he names them after celebrities. So he has like a Marshall Faulk sandwich. So he can integrate Marshall.
Yeah.
And do the cooking side of it.
Yeah, you can do just some fun stuff.
It's Aaron and then Seth.
Hey.
Great to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Continuing in that conversation of content-based marketing, right? What do you see as the future of branding in this short-form context, right? Because the attention spans are getting shorter. So like if a brand like Ike Sandwiches, like if it's going to be a short-form content, What's the end game? Is it to buy a sandwich in that moment? Is it to buy a t-shirt? Is it to just create brand awareness? What's the end game?
I think the end game is to build a brand for and an affinity for the product, an affinity for the stores, an affinity for the brand itself. And if you have an affinity for it, you're going to want to go in there and support it in some way. I mean, everything is about, you don't have to go there and say, we're going to give you a sandwich for 49 cents. I mean, you know, it's not always about, you know, some discount. If you look at Apple, Steve Jobs would always get up and say, we never even talk about our product. We talk about what we stand for, think different, you know, and he puts up Muhammad Ali and Gandhi and, you know, all these other people. So I just think you have to build trust and an affinity. And a lot of times what's happening now is in content, people or companies are giving away, and David does this too, information that's helpful to others without charging them anything to build some relationship that can be monetized later. And that's a big trend. The other trend that's happening now, I think in a really big way, is the way that AI is working its way into content creation. And you've seen that because it's working its way into huge companies. Coca-Cola is doing its Christmas ads, you know, using AI. It's working its way into people that just can, you know, go on an app that's out there that to help them create for free or near free a commercial or some type of advertising that looks super like luxurious, but in fact it costs nothing. And you can have virtual influencers now that nobody even knows whether they're real or not. It's a crazy time. But I think the most important thing is to build affinity with your brand, to give away something that's of value to your customer, whether it's a laugh or it's information, and all of a sudden you'll build a relationship of trust.
And let me interject real quick, and then Seth will take your question. I think community is understated because of the false impressions that people have of size of community. One of the advantages of being old, and I'm not joking, somebody could call me today and say, David, you need to be down at Petco Stadium. I want you to stand on the pitcher's mound before the game starts, and I'm going to give you 2 minutes to speak to the entire crowd at Petco. Now, the truth is, I would rush down there in my mind thinking, what a huge opportunity. Truth is, nobody would really listen to me. They couldn't hear me. The sound system sucks. Mm-hmm. It's 2 minutes on the mound. But for some reason, the older perception of marketing and branding and community building would be, this is an extraordinary opportunity. The extraordinary opportunity actually lies in the 2-minute video that I would create from it. And here's the irony. I'm rushing down to talk to 42,000 people at Petco. I post a video today that has 42,000 views. My team's like, I'm sorry, man. It didn't perform very well. And I'm thinking, hold on a second, that's 42,000 people that actually did pay attention. Some are commenting and some are sharing because it resonated with them. This has way more value. One of the things I'm focusing on today that very few people are is my email community. Because my audience is guys like Lenny, C-level executives, high net wealth people in the world. I have one of the biggest audiences in LinkedIn of high net wealth C-level executives. That's why I get paid so much by companies to post on LinkedIn. Companies don't care if I post on TikTok. They don't care if I post on Instagram because that's not my audience. I have 1 million followers on Instagram, but they're not doing shit for me. But when Shelly Ibach comes up to you, the CEO of Sleep Number, going, Dave Meltzer, we need to do more. I love your videos. I'm like, oh, where do you follow me? And she goes, I don't. I just watch you on LinkedIn. That said something to me. And so knowing that community and the value of the community, old people still use email. They still open it. And I that's why if you look at everything I do, what do I say? Email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I want your email address. I want you to opt in so that I can push you. And I know if you're going to take from video and give me an email, you're in my frequency, you're in my community. I can sell you anything. Dr. Jacobs at Qualcomm was my mentor when I was in the telephone industry in 99. Sure. And he said, Dave, what business am I in? I said, you're in the dual mode chip business. He said, no, I own the customer. He goes, someday I can sell all these people insurance, right? Because he owned the customer at Qualcomm. He was a chip company, but he branded the chip and nobody else was doing that. You probably don't know what chip sits inside your iPhone because they're not branding it anymore the way that Qualcomm branded the dual mode chip. All right, Seth, go ahead.
Question a little bit of a different direction, but I'm curious to how the revenue model of sports agencies has shifted over the last, like from when you first got into now.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I mean, you know, when I first got into business, only the super agents had all the information. So it was, you had so much information that you could put your arms around that you kept secret that made you valuable. Today, everything is public. So you pretty much know everybody's salary. You know, the collective bargaining agreement pretty much determines how much individuals are going to make. So the compensation that agents who negotiate sports contracts can make has shrunk dramatically. And sometimes it's nothing. People are just trying to get in the door so that they can do other things, like I was talking about earlier, be involved with them to do their marketing, be involved with them to do their production company, be involved. I mean,
equity.
Look at equity-based opportunities. I mean, look what Maverick Carter has done with LeBron James, and he's not even his sports agent. You know, so that's the kind of stuff that's happening today. And because I mentioned earlier, athletes have more influence in culture than ever before. There's a lot more buckets that you can tap into than there ever was before. So if you are at the helm and you can architect and orchestrate that, you're going to be in a position to generate a lot of revenue for yourself or your company. But just to be a traditional sports agent, to negotiate a contract, that's a thing of the past, pretty much. And, you know, I'll tell you very famously, about 6 months ago, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who won the MVP, was about to get his contract done, and he knew he was going to get a max contract. And right before he was ready to do the contract, he fired his agent, who would have made $7 million from that contract. So, boom, he just did it himself. And you're seeing more and more and more of that. And in fact, my guy, I'm not even anymore a registered agent. I go, well, I don't want to do it. I went with Adam Silver, who's a very close friend of mine, the commissioner of the NBA, to the Olympics. We were together in Paris. And this is after I started representing AJ DeBonsa. And he said, oh, this kid's going to be great. And he said, you got to get recertified again. I go, well, I want to be recertified. I can advise him and then he could do his own contract. And he said, yeah, you're right. You can just get a lawyer to look it over. And, you know, so it's really changed a lot. It's a fun time. It's a great time, actually. But you just have to be in the right place and know what the architectural outlook should be.
Lee told me when I got into the business, someday we went from sports lawyers to super agents. We'll go back to sports lawyers. And they'll just charge you by the hour so that you do have some guidance as well.
But you don't want to just be that.
You do. Oh, nobody wants that job. I got a law degree. He has a law degree. We're not practicing law.
Nope.
But I think understanding business and whether it's tax architecture, when you're at the highest in your subject matter topic or expertise, there's a new realm. So you have, let's just take tax, not sports. In tax, you have your bookkeepers, then you have a CPA, then you usually have a tax lawyer. Now there's tax architects, but they're the ones who have so much experience. They're maybe making laws in the tax realm, and they're facilitating all of these different people that do their jobs into architecting what's best for you personally. This word architect, I think, applies to so many things today that you can be at the highest level, the technology architect. It's beyond the CFO, the CTO, the COO, the CEO. These architects are the ones who have had 30, 40 years of experience and relationship capital that can go ahead and create these opportunities because of what they know and who they know that has extreme value. So my tax architect, right, it was pretty easy for him because he said to me, well, how much are you paying in taxes? And I told him, look, I live in California. I do pretty well. I pay about 30-some%. And he goes, what if I could tell you that legally you should be paying zero? And I took that amount. And then he literally said, I'll be your tax architect for $250,000 a year. And I said, really? He goes, but I will guarantee you that I will save you this much on your taxes. That's not a really hard sell. What's really hard is to be an expert to a point or an architect to a point where he could guarantee that to me.
Did he promise you wouldn't go to jail?
Yeah, he promised me. He literally did. In fact, he explained to me why most people doing what they normally do have a better chance of going to jail because they actually architect the laws. So they actually files things and do things so that they get a response from the IRS. So they actually have precedent to say you can do this because they test it. They have, because they're family office guys and they deal in billions of dollars. But I see the same thing when he's saying, yeah, I did this deal, and this deal. It sounds easy to the young kid that's like, oh, I want to be a sports agent like Lenny. Yeah, but he doesn't even want to be registered because he knows better because he spent 40 years where he knows exactly how to get those deals done and who to talk to get those deals done. And that's the value or position you guys want to get to. Whatever stage you are today, you want to be the architect, the expert, and not expect you to get there overnight either. Let's give a huge round of applause for Lenny.